I was telling the guys when I got in this morning that I didn't have my phone for the last 24 hours. And I got to reevaluate my entire life because of how bad it felt to not have a phone. And by the way, still had full internet, was still able to DM people, you know, was still basically all over social media. All I missed was a little bit of text messaging and some calls. And I felt like I was missing a limb. Like I wasn't the same person. Like I was walking around like a shell of myself. Time to maybe go to phone rehab for me. And anybody who loses their phone for a short period of time, I think can probably attest to this. We are fully cyborgs now. We are cyborgs. Whew, spooky stuff. What a start for your Toronto Blue Jays. God, we needed that, huh? Didn't everybody need that? Wasn't that just exactly the kind of game that Toronto needed to start the season? Isn't this exactly what I was talking about yesterday? And okay, I got BNS coming up. And by the way, Brandon Belt later in the show, who I'm really, really excited to talk to because the guy should be playing Major League Baseball. And I want to kind of get to the bottom of why he's not. Because, yeah, the guy was really good last year. He was 858 OPS. Stayed healthy. And this all after a terrible start to a season. And yet he's not working. He's not raking for someone. So that we'll try to get to the bottom of later in the show. Can't wait to talk to Brandon Belt and also some of the stuff from last season. But, yeah, that was the feeling yesterday. The Jays go down 1-2-3 in the first inning. What, did they have a base runner through the first nine guys? No, right? I think that Eflin had five punch outs through the first three innings. A guy who's not known for striking guys out. The Jays are just going down, down, down. Everybody looks the exact same. Vladdy gets a middle fastball. What does he do? He beats it into the ground. Dalton Varsho works himself into a good count. And then the pitcher's like, wait, I'll just throw this guy strikes. And he's like, ah, my kryptonite. Jose Berríos. First batter, bang, out of the yard. Yandy Diaz rips one, line drive, home run. And I'm looking at social media on my laptop, by the way, because, again, no phone. So I'm just, like, sitting there like it's a bygone era, watching the scroll, doom scrolling, seeing what everybody has to say. And it's a lot of, we're back, we're back, we're back. Oh, my God, the Blue Jays are so back. And you could feel it. You could feel the trauma of last season just boiling over and staying in that same spot. Like we never left. We never left. You woke up and it was opening day, but the feeling was the exact same. And that's what sucks about a horrific loss. This is why I made the Seahawks analogy, is I'm telling you as a Seahawks fan, when they lost that Super Bowl, and granted it was different because during that offseason there were articles about, oh boy, this is actually going to get pretty ugly amongst some of the players and their infighting and all that kind of stuff. And the most vocal guy about the Berríos decision was, I believe, Whit Merrifield. Maybe there was somebody else too in there, but I remember Whit taking kind of the hardest line position and he didn't return. So maybe they just had more of the same guys that knew they were going to be coming back, be on the same page about it, try and get over it. But I felt like mentally for the fan base, for the players, for the media, having the rest of that baseball game go that way was of crucial import. Yeah, you get this massive turn, Berríos, who melted down last year in the home opener. And by the way, like the playoffs for him was incredible. And this might be a bit of a turning point for me in terms of the way I view Berríos. Like these last couple of high leverage starts, because I think opening day is a high leverage start. Okay. Like I really believe that this is about as clutch as it gets outside of a playoff game or a game to try to clinch you getting in or, you know, help you win a division. Stuff that doesn't happen until much later in the year. This is the best test that you can possibly have. But instead of him folding, instead of him looking a little rattled, which he has in the past in spots like this, Berríos hasn't been perfect in spots like this. He just stayed pinpoint accuracy, nasty stuff, until I think it was the sixth inning when he gave up his next run. But between then and there, it was just, whoa, this is gross. This is filthy. He is just dealing right now. Spectacular. And especially for a guy that got a lot of good press during spring. A lot of, hey, this guy's actually looking a little bit different. So that was nice. But then all of a sudden, boom, it's Springer. He hits a bomb. Biggio rips one. Vladdy, the cockshot, moonshot, like incredible blast. 450 feet that looked like it was never going to land. Dead center. Whoo, all of a sudden you start to feel good. But the best part was they get runners in scoring position. And they have a chance to tack on, and you're going, all right, it's 3-1, that's nice. And then they keep piling it on, and other guys come through with hits throughout the lineup. And I thought, man, this is good for the mentals. This is good for the feelings. So, yes, it's one game. And, yes, it could be meaningless if they end up losing the next three. But I got to believe that it means something. Is Ben there? All right, beautiful. So let's ask him what he thought about it. It's our boy, Ben Nicholson-Smith, at The Letters, senior managing editor of our MLB site. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Doing pretty well. I had a phone yesterday, so that puts me a little bit ahead of you. I texted you, as you know, and just got nothing back.
Yeah, you thought I was just rude. I was just rude. I was like, nah. Like, you trying to talk to me on baseball day? How dare you? This is very, very unlike us. Okay, so let me just ask you this. Do you think that this was just the mental component of things? Because it is 162, and I know that every year we always get wrapped up in the first series, and then all of a sudden you're a month and a half in, and you're like, everything we said was the dumbest thing ever. But do you think that there is an important mental component for the players out of the gate here? Like, seeing them cash runners immediately, seeing a guy like Vladdy hit a bomb, where are you at in terms of that import to break the bridge between last season and this season?
Yeah, I think it's real. I do think it matters. I think that we can't lose sight of the fact that they play 162 and they will lose 60, 70 games. Some of them will be devastating. You know, that's going to happen. That's part of the baseball season. And if they lose today, like, that's part of it. They're not going to be perfect. But you had to get a win out of the way, and you had to get a satisfying win where no one's coughing up a lead late, and you don't have to burn through six leverage relievers, and no one's making a mental error. Like, getting that out of the way early, I actually think does matter. And that's why I think that yesterday was, I do think it was bigger than just your ordinary May the 15th win over the Royals.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing. That's what I'm basically trying to hone in on is, okay, yeah, baseball is the number one qualifying sport, right? By the way, it's like, and it's sample size until what, August? Right? Like, these early August, late July, before we stop doing the whole, and I understand that baseball has many games before we say anything about the sport, right? But I'm trying to figure out what that actually meant yesterday and what that's going to mean for them. Because I think if it goes the other way, right? Like, if it goes, Vladdy doesn't have a home run, nobody hits a bomb, you know, the Jays go basically down in order the way that they did over and over again, or they get an opportunity with runners in scoring position and two outs and they don't cash some, and the Rays just eke out some kind of ugly, undeserved, your pitcher deals like Barrios did, and the Jays lose 3-1 in that ball game. I feel like the carryover is just ugly. And this is what I was saying to Shulman yesterday is, I feel like they can keep their head above water during this difficult stretch to start the season. But if they're like 3-4 games under 500, you know, coming to the home opener, I don't know what the vibe is going to be after that first game here, you know, like what it's going to feel like going to the ballpark, and that you cannot have in April.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's the fans, it's the support staff, it's everyone, right? Because, you know, if John Schneider starts the season 4-7 as manager, he understands this. He's been around the game a long time. He knows that that wouldn't doom the Blue Jays, but at the same time, it is going to impact the vibe around the team. He's answering questions from media members who are maybe a little bit more aggressive, or I don't know what you want to say. And then you have, you know, just the whole tone around the team shifting. Everyone's a little bit more stressed. It's tough to quantify. I think end of the day, these are performers who are used to, you know, blocking out stress and performing under very difficult circumstances. So they could perform with the Rogers Center crowd on edge. They've done it before, but end of the day, it's a lot easier if the crowd is with you. And if all of the staff and support structure around them is just a little bit more relaxed and feeling the vibes a little bit more. And that's way more possible after a day where Vlad and Biggio and Springer all hit bombs.
Yeah, the older I get as a sports fan, the more I actually believe in the vibes. Like, again, I think that teams can overcome them. the more I think that teams have guys that it really doesn't matter to them whatsoever. Like, they can perform in a crappy atmosphere. They can, but overall, I do believe that there is an impact of fans, media, on the players, and the players, like a lot of this, there's a certain synergy to it. And I'm going to ask Brendan Belt about it later today, just how they felt, you know, at the Rogers Center and some of those big games last year in the fall, like the Rangers series where, I was at those games and people were nonplussed, and just, what the carryover is for some of those guys. Maybe I'm hoping that now that he's not with the team, he'll speak honestly about it, because I think it was kind of ugly. Anyways, it was awesome. It was great. So it is the first game. Here's another qualifier. No one's going to hold you to this. I have three things from that game where I went, okay, these are the three things that I think mattered a little bit. Two are positive, one is a negative, but it's mostly just being fun. What mattered the most to you in that game? Like, if you had to say one meaningful thing about a player, what would it be?
Barrios was dealing. Yeah, that's what I come back to. Yeah, like, he looked nasty. Yeah. This is what I texted you, and I guess you've maybe seen it since. But
I did.
So
I got
good.
My phone back. I was like, yeah, nice.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm glad. You don't want to miss messages for too long. You got to make sure that you get that that rolling.
But it is kind of cool, though. So, you got to admit that it did give me a bit of a cool factor, because there were a lot of people I didn't reply to that normally I'm just snap reply. And I'm like, did you feel like, man, he's pretty cool not texting back, you know?
I'll be honest with you. That was not my exact thought. My thoughts just went elsewhere.
Yeah.
I wasn't sitting there thinking about how cool you
were. I think other people are cool when they don't text me back. I'm like, oh, that's cool. They got stuff going on. No, I'm just so anxious that I need to bang replies almost immediately. But sorry, go on.
Yes. Before it's even arrived, you got a response, right? That's great. But Barrios looks so good, right? And I know Yandy Diaz took him deep first batter of the game, but even that was a fastball in on the hands, 96 with some run. And like, that's a really good job by Yandy Diaz. So I just thought that his breaking stuff looked good. He was locating his breaking stuff, even, you know, strike the ball, two strike breaking balls where he's trying to get the opponents to swing at it. Those were good quality misses for the most part. And he missed occasionally, as every pitcher does, but I thought the breaking stuff was really good. The command was good. He's obviously, we saw him field his position really well. He does those little things. As you mentioned, he really seemed to be focused and composed on the mound. Like, everything that you could want in a major league starting pitcher was there. Jose Barrios, to me, looked like a frontline starting pitcher on a really good team. And that's not a shock, right? That's what he's been in the course of his career, but that's pretty big. Like, he looked to be in top form. And that was my biggest takeaway from the game.
Why it's really big to me is if you get Gausman returned to health, and I don't know how deep he's going to go in his first game, but eventually, like, you got to imagine that he's still going to be the same guy, right? There's no real indicator that he's going to have some meaningful drop off, right? He's not someone that I looked at or read about being, you know, Fangraphs every year has their guys where they say, this guy's dead. And I hate saying this, but they actually projected the Manoah thing last year, for example, right? Like, they were very down on Manoah, and then it turned into itself, and I went, ugh. And they didn't project that badly, but I never caught any whiffs of that could be Gausman. But one of the principles that the Blue Jays' success was predicated on going into last year was that they would have two guys at the very front of the rotation that were as good as anybody. And if you look at them in the division, right, like them in the AL East, if you have Gausman and that version of Barrios, you got the best 1-2 punch out of anybody, and it basically does replicate what we thought it might be with Gausman Manoah.
Yeah, exactly. That's huge. And, you know, Chris Bassitt has been really, really good as recently as last year, and obviously they're hopeful that he can replicate that, but he's getting into his mid-30s. Obviously, they're
also pitched 200 innings for the first time ever in his career.
Right. And I think there's a lot of reason for optimism there. But look, if you're really looking at the guys who might be, you know, all-star caliber pitchers on this team and starting in a playoff game, I think Barrios and Gausman are the one too. And Gausman, when he pitched on Monday, I thought looked great as well. And the velo was there. He was up to 97 miles an hour. So that's really, you know, the stuff, you can't fake the stuff, right? That's part of the reason that Manoah hasn't been as effective, as his slider hasn't been as dynamic as it was in 2022 when he had that great first full season with the Jays, and 2021 when he broke in. So you can't fake it at this level. You either have the stuff or you don't. I mean, to me, Barrios just has it. And so that's a great starting point for the Jays after game one.
Mm-hmm. So I agree. That is one of mine. So that's out of the way. Here's my other one. It's not just that Vladdy hit a home run. It's that he hit his longest home run since April 10th, 2022. That he destroyed one. That it was a, oh my God, remember this guy? Remember that he's special? And for him, the reminder that he is that. For him going, oh yeah, no, I can hit baseballs there as far as I hit it, the way that I hit it. I think that matters, and here's why. I brought this up a little bit yesterday, but I do want to dig into it a little bit more with you. I hated that he brought up the home run jacket, and I don't think that it's a big deal in terms of having a home run jacket or not. Like, I watched the Mariners last night, right, and flipping back and forth, and they've got their big trident. Like, teams have that stuff. I don't give a crap about the actual jacket itself, but it's clearly been outlined that it's a thing that it was polarizing in their clubhouse, that some guys didn't like it, and then he was out there saying he still did. To me, he just reeks of a guy that constantly is still searching for having fun, letting him be himself and have fun, have fun, have fun. And the way that's going to happen the most to me is just if he's having success, and not just success, like home runs, man, if he's hitting for power. And so for him to have that reminder and to start the season with everyone being like, hell yeah, Vladdy, what a cool moment. I think that matters more than anything else for any other position player anyways on that baseball team, because I do believe there's more pressure on Vladdy this season than there was even last season, as much as everyone's trying to say the otherwise, like almost try to gaslight him into this idea that, you know, it's different, that there is more run support, that there is more positive regression. It's like, nah, man, this season's really going to come down to you and whether or not you can rediscover the power stroke and, yeah, OPS closer to 900 rather than closer to 700.
Oh, for sure. They need that. And I think there is pressure on Vlad Jr., just as there's pressure on Bo Bichette and Danny Jansen and a lot of these guys on this team, right? As they approach free agency, there's no question that they face pressure. I think that's why it's good, just as a quick aside, that you have someone like Justin Turner around, where like Justin Turner really wants to win, but I wouldn't say that he faces the same pressure as an individual, given that he's won, given that he's made his money and made his legacy in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he's 40 years old. I think it'd be weird if he was like, this is now my time to make things happen for me, how they'll discuss my career.
Yeah, exactly. Him and Joey Votto, like, they're hopefully not sitting there thinking, I have to prove I can do it. They've already proven that. With Vlad Jr., with Bo, who, you know, quietly has another two-hit game, as you'd expect with Bo Bichette, these guys, there is pressure. They have not won a single playoff game. We're aware of that. Believe me, they are, of course, they're well aware of that. They're into their fifth, sixth year as Major League players. They haven't won a single playoff game. They clearly have greater designs than flaming out in the wild card series. And, you know, we could have a whole discussion about the home run jacket. I personally, I'm sort of indifferent to it, you know, one way or the other, but I think it's interesting. And I think with Vlad Jr., just to get that first one out of the way, and I agree with you, for it to be a 450-foot blast to center field, like an absolute no-doubt shot, then he almost hit another one. He was pretty close late in the game to hitting his second home run. So that's great quality of contact. And if you look at the swing decisions he made, center cut fastballs, center cut pitches, he was all over them. And then you go toward the pitches that are off the plate, he didn't swing at a single one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, what was that? Did you just get a cat?
I have a cat.
Yeah.
He wants to contribute.
I was like, oh, that cat was really like, it's my time. I agree, Vladdy.
Oh, believe
yeah,
me.
Like, let me get in on this. Yes, I concur. Yeah, so I'm with you, man. I just think that the moonshot mattered. And, you know, the pressure stuff to me is like, I did five guys that have the highest stakes yesterday. I put Atkins one simply because I think that, you know, it's a job security issue moving forward, and also like a just cemented legacy thing, whereas Vladdy continues to play. But yeah, Vladdy was two, Springer was three, Varsha was four, Jansen was five. Do you disagree with that? Anybody on that list? Do you think someone else should have been on there?
For as far as what are the stakes?
Yeah, biggest stakes for them this season. Basically, like if I'll give you a quickest rundown as possible of it, like one is that it's like, again, Atkins, you know, he's was basically responsible for figuring out the clubhouse mix. And if his baseball stuff, if it fails, then he has clearly failed. There's no more like, oh, well, we trust the process. It's like, yeah, you've had enough years of it. Two was Vladdy because I think that if he has another basically like mediocre season where people have to go like, this is good for a normal baseball player, that you're going to start to lose confidence in 2021 and start to really wonder what the ceiling of the player is anymore, especially as he's going to be turning 26. I put Springer 3 because he's 34 and his OPS was 332 last year. And yeah, there was the personality issue stuff from last season and the buzz about the way that he was responding to some of the stuff clubhouse wise. Like the numbers that actually did indicate a drop off. And then Varsho was 4, only lower because he has still time on the contract. But like, yeah, obviously the trade and how he dealt with it and the horrible season at the dish. And then 5, I put Jansen because he's got a contract coming up and he misses 2 months of every season with injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I would say I totally agree with you on Springer because I think this is the year that either it's just a middling contract, right?
Yeah.
It's $150 million. It's the biggest contract in franchise history. And it's just kind of, all right, I mean, he was good, not great. Like that, that's one pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, and that's the pathway that we're on. Or the pathway is he actually has a George Springer type year, the kind of year that he had in Houston, the kind of year that the Blue Jays envisioned for him. And he pushes the Blue Jays into the playoffs with a 30 homer season. And he's like a 3 WAR player or a 4 WAR player for this team. So that to me, that's actually a pretty big swing. And I don't disagree with Varsho, but I would replace Varsho. I would put Manoah in because same sort of thing. Manoah this year, we find out, okay, is he just kind of, you know, petering out of MLB, you know, the MLB picture, or maybe he just needed a little bit more time in spring. He's going to be back there in May. The shoulder's going to be fine. He's going to be a viable big league starter. And it's 2023 that was more of the blip.
So here's where I'm at with that. The reason why I didn't put him is because I'm scared like that it's already, you know, been just, like I feel like the pressure is lower because the expectation has diminished quite a bit. Like I don't know if he was, I know Votto was at the game yesterday. I don't think Manoah was there, right?
I thought I saw him in the dugout, but I was
You thought you did see him? Okay. Because I was going to say that it didn't feel as though he was connected to this team basically in any way. And what, like, Arden came on with me earlier in the week and was like, yeah, you don't even expect him to see it till May. But, you know, this is the thing I find fascinating with Manoah is if there isn't an injury and he's pitching well in Buffalo, are we sure he has a job on the big league roster?
Right. I mean, at this point, probably not, because Bowden Francis is going to get the chance. And we'll see, right? We're going to learn a lot in the next 3-4 weeks about how ready Bowden Francis is. Mm-hmm. And if he's ready, he'll stay. And if he's not, then they probably would go to Manoah if he's healthy. And, you know, hearing Ross Atkins talk about Manoah a couple days ago, sounds like there is some optimism. And, like, I don't think that – I think we want to temper that optimism clearly. I think every Blue Jays fan is doing that right now, and rightfully so. But I just – I wouldn't rule it out with him.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ruling him out. That's not how I mean to come off with this thing. Like you know, I'm a Noah guy. I got a lot of time for him, and I want to see him return to Major League Baseball. I actually think that there's the part of him when it comes to like confidence and attitude and swagger with this baseball team that I actually think that, you know, he only that he brings that I'd love to see. My belief, like last season, where I was like, don't worry, he'll get his way back. He'll find his way back. He's Alek Manoah. The more pressure, the better it's going to be. I'm a little further from that than I was. And it's just like,
same.
You know, especially when you do stuff like, all right, you had all these hurdles to overcome and you put in all this work in the offseason and he was just nonstop letting people know how much he was putting the work in and wasn't doing media, was just gym. You know, working. And then he gets to the season, he throws what was it, 2 innings? Did he even get 2 innings?
Less.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, you know, and he plunks a couple of guys, which is actually kind of his thing. But then, you know, he walks a couple of guys. The velo's there, so at least he's like, okay, I got something to build off of. And then, boom, hurt. And you just go, damn, man, that's another 2 months of just work, where you have to think about it and you can't just get it out of the way. Like, that's what I'm saying about this Jays team is you got it out of the way. You got the win out of the way. You cash runners in scoring position. You watch Vladdy hit that moonshot. Barrios went out and dealt, and you got proof of concept right away. And so I just think the longer this stuff goes, the longer Manoah goes without proof of concept, the harder it's going to be for him to, get back.
Yeah, agree with that. Now, I'll throw a couple little questions at you from the game from yesterday.
Sure.
That I'm not trying to be negative with this, but,
no.
You know, now that we're on this, like, slightly negative pathway.
Yeah.
So, You know, I think defensively, like Springer in right field, that sequence
horrible
where
play.
One goes over his head, you know, bad read, right?
Yeah.
And then he tries to make up for it. And that's the one where it's like, you can't do that. It's fine. You don't have to be the best right fielder in baseball history. Just let it drop, get that ball back into the infield instead of having it go behind you to the wall and give the Rays a chance to get back in that game. So that's a case where it's like, you're 34, you're not 24. You don't have to try to be this Superman right fielder. And then IKF too, like the arm, it's interesting because we're seeing it in a game setting now.
Yeah.
So the arm didn't, and we're used to watching Matt Chapman, right? So this is where, you know, it's a bit of a difference, and he won a gold glove at third base, and I don't want to read too much into one throw, but I'm just saying I'm watching IKF and seeing what kind of defender is he at third base?
Here's the thing. He has to be the greatest defender at third base because the bat, like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
He can't hit. This isn't a, like with Varsho, it was, hey, he did hit 27 home runs, right? And maybe he can hit a couple more, and maybe the Rogers Center helps him. That I at least can get behind. The IKF one, I don't get it. It's a career OPS plus of, I think, 87, right? He's never hit. He's not so, oh wow, if they tweak this, no, he's supposed to be a glove man. And when he bobbled that one baseball too, what could have been a surefire double play, I went, you can never do that, IKF. You have to be sterling at third base. You have to make me feel zero nerves whatsoever for this entire season, because if you even have a hint, a whiff of stuff like that, you're going to be hated. You're going to be hated by people. Chapman was hated at the end, and he still finished with a decent season, and he was an elite glove man. So what hope do you think you have? Like, oof. That's basically the only thing going for him right now, is that he replaced a guy who was miserable for the last 2 months of the baseball season.
But it's so funny, right? Because you think about, you're right, Matt Chapman was hated. And you
hated.
Think about it, he was quite a good set aside. Like the defense, obviously,
sure.
was really, really good. And then offensively, he was actually a good offensive baseball player.
Yeah.
And yet, like you said, and he was bad, obviously, down the stretch. And that contributed to it. Because if it had been more consistent, that probably would have shaped the way people viewed him. But yeah, like even Matt Chapman, who was essentially an excellent, excellent player and consistent acquisition here for 2 years for the Blue Jays, he was disliked. And then IKF, he has not hit at the major league level at a league average rate ever, so he really does have to bring value with the glove. I think that third base job is his to start the year, but I don't think he has guarantees of, you know, being the everyday guy even a month from now. So he's gonna have to earn it with defense and with offense.
So anyway, the remember I said I was gonna do the two positive feelings I had and then the joke negative. So I actually have two joke negatives. One's not a joke. The one was really IKF. I'm nervous about it already. Like immediately I went, oh no. Right. I forgot that you're here and that this is your job and you're supposed to be an everyday guy, and how quickly, if things aren't working out with the others around you, that the bottom of the order can feel lifeless if there's a scenario because you're a part of that. But I'm like, all right, whatever, I'll give it time and he'll probably be good defensively. The one that is a pure joke from that standpoint is I think Justin Turner looks weird in the Blue Jays uniform, like uncomfortably weird. And I know it, and Jeff Hazzaparty, producer of the morning show, made a good point to me. He said everybody looks kind of bad in that Blue Jays uniform, like that particular one. Feel like Donaldson pulled off that color well, and not a lot of other guys do. It looks kind of, it's just a bit of a childish uniform, you know. It's one of the more it's not one of the best in my opinion, but
it's the new jersey too, right?
Yeah,
the Fanatics jersey.
I don't love it. I like the other ones, like, you know, I love when the Blue Jays wear their whites and their grays, and but that blue has never really done it for me. I always have a belief that how a guy looks in a uniform, like you can tell right away whether it's going to work out. And for him, I went, oh no, this doesn't look good. The big red beard with that Blue Jays blue. I was like, nope, next, you know, get our next guest back on. Brandon Belt, pick up the phone. We need you back.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of funny because I like, if you're a Rockies fan or if you're like a Pittsburgh Pirates fan and
season's over
watching that game, well, yeah, first of all, your season's over.
Yeah.
So that's why you're watching Blue Jays baseball on opening day. But, you know, it might be one of those, one of those free agent signings where you just tune in on the first week of the season and you're like, what? Justin Turner's a Blue Jay?
Yeah.
You know, like, do you ever have those moments?
Yes.
Where it's like, yeah, just like very surprised to see a certain player with a different team. So I'm sure some fans around the game were having that realization yesterday.
Can I give you the opposite of that from yesterday? Polanco on the Mariners. I went, ooh, this looks really good. This, I don't know why, but it was just right away. I went, this fits. This Mariners team feels better because they have Polanco hitting right behind J-Rod. And he just, everything about him in that uniform looked right. And they haven't had
Polanco
a second baseman
fits anywhere.
I know, but it just, for something about it, he just, like, I'm saying the uniform, right? This is just purely a stupid guy who looks at dudes where it's like, you know, this is a bad example, but it's like, yeah, the Hakeem Olajuwon in a Raptors uniform, right? Like, think about that kind of stuff where you look at it and you're like, this is wrong. This doesn't feel good. And yes, Turner was that to me, whereas Polanco, I went, no, you look amazing in this uniform and you're going to work out there. You're going to be a fan favorite in Seattle. I can already see it all.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Twins, of course, put Royce Lewis in to essentially backfill, and he's already out. Hits a homer in his first at bat, pulls a quad in the second. So it's like, you know, this is where you can just never have too much position player depth. And this is where, like, IKF, to bring it back to him, he's a guy who historically has been a really, really good bench player. And then if you push him into some of those more regular situations, the bat has gotten exposed. And so that's got to be a concern if you're the Jays. Now, no team has like nine sluggers. And if he's hitting eighth or ninth for you, that can probably be okay. But he's got to produce a little bit. Like, it's a difference between being a little bit below average versus a lot below average. So we got to see where he kind of settles offensively and defensively.
So one thing I did want to ask you on the show was in our texts, you've been like fairly, without saying as much, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but when we've been texting, it seems like you are more optimistic about this Blue Jays offense than I would say the average person I've talked to. And again, part of that is, I think, yeah, you're a professional and you evaluate these things differently than a lot of my buddies who are just fans. And they're like, yeah, this team sucks. And I'm like, right. Okay. So that's their position day one is it was, I would tell you, looking at my phone, it was so funny when I got it back because I did have a bunch of friends that were like, you could tell it was the end of the first inning, right? Or like, I hate this team already. Yeah. I had a bunch of those texts or a bunch of, I knew this team would suck. I went, okay, that's fine. But yeah, why is it that you feel as though, like, am I wrong in assessing that? Because again, this is me kind of picking up little stuff, but yeah, you seem higher on them. Why?
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, that's an accurate read. I think this team is going to hit. And for a while, my biggest questions around this team were really pitching related, because for a lot of spring, certainly when I was down there for spring training, Gausman essentially wasn't throwing and Manoah essentially wasn't throwing. And, you know, that creates some really big question marks on the pitching staff. And at that point, too, you know, Yariel Rodriguez was just slowly starting to ramp up. And you kind of look at the pitching staff and you say, I don't know. But offensively, I just look at a group that has some guys in their prime in Vladdy and Kirk and Bo, who should be really good hitters. Even Biggio has emerged as like a competent complementary player. Then you look at, okay, you got Springer, you got Kiermaier, you got Varsho. That's a pretty good outfield that can certainly hit some bombs for you. Turner is at least a competent DH. And look, if he's not, or if he's hurt, he won't be playing in the second half of the season. And Joey Votto, to me, looks like someone who can come up and do some damage. Even Arnie Clement and David Schneider on the bench, like, that's not bad to turn in Vogelbach on the bench. Like, that is a pretty solid offensive collection of bench hitters to turn to late in the game if you need a bomb from either the right side or the left side. So I actually think that, yeah, you look at this group and it's not perfect. It's not as good as it was in 2021. I mean, we've seen some elite offenses here, 2015, 16, 21. Like, there have been some incredible offensive groups, and this isn't on that level, but I think it is a more than competent offensive group and one that can do definitely more damage than it did last year.
Yeah, my only real fear and concern with it is, like, it felt like a group where it was the, hey, a bunch of things got to go right, guys. And when you do the positive regression thing, but you're not just doing it for a couple of dudes, like, it would have been one thing if I looked at it and said, oh, it's going to be positive regression for just Vladdy and you know, just Kirk. That feels good. But it was, no, you need that from almost everybody on the team.
Yeah.
And that's where I went, ugh. And then you factor in a couple of the dudes with their ages, where it was Turner and Springer specifically, and the health of guys like Danny Jansen. And I said, man, this just feels like, I don't like any scenario where you're talking yourself into multiple things having to break your way, right? Yeah. I like it when it's one or two things. Once you start to get into three, four, I get a little more skeptical. But yeah, just again, proof of concept yesterday, feeling that George Springer, someone who, God, they need so desperately to be good, not okay. And Vladdy, someone they need to be great, not good. God, that was so nice. That was so, so nice to see. Okay, so last thing before I let you go, you've been generous with the time today. What's the story you're most excited to see play out this year?
For the Jays or
yeah, for the Jays. No, not baseball. Well, yeah. I mean, for you, for me, it's Shohei Ohtani revealing himself as a liar who gambled on all these games and being suspended for life. That's my hope, is that's what that ends up happening. But yeah, that's what I want to play.
It's interesting because, like, with the Jonte Porter stuff, like, yeah, that seems so different than the Ohtani stuff.
Well,
and I think one of those, yeah, situations seems like, yeah, this player may have been quite involved, you know, based on the evidence that's out there publicly.
Okay.
And with the other, it's, yeah, really hard.
No. I don't know what to think of the Shohei stuff. I think that here's where I would put with Shohei. I think that some of the, like, transferring $1 million from your bank account and not triggering banks' fraud detection systems or your internal financial people, it seems like a mystery that I don't really quite understand and I need more explanation of, like, pretty detailed as to how he wouldn't be somewhat involved in it. But do I think, like, yeah, necessarily, like, he was gambling or all this other stuff? Like, no, probably not. I don't think he'd go out on that hard of a limb if that was the case. That being said, some of these guys, they do feel invincible when they get to be that big, you know? They feel untouchable, and wouldn't be the first time guys lied. The Porter thing, people keep going, JD, where's your take on it? Here's my take on it. The NBA would not have publicly said that they were launching this investigation and defamed his character in this way without having a pretty conclusive case already. For this to, like, get to that level where Woj was tweeting about it, you're already pretty far down the line. This wasn't like, we should look into this. It was, this guy is dead to rights and his career is over. Sorry, but that's the way that this is going.
I agree with that read. Not that I'm an NBA betting expert.
How dare you not?
Or either a betting expert NBA expert.
If I was just anything in life, it would be betting expert in one way. Like, that would be my dream. Although I did pick the Jays yesterday. I did bet the Jays. I'm a homer, so
there we go.
Way to go. Way
there
to pick the home team, you dumb homer.
Wait, and you got to remember, too, with baseball, you know, and their history with betting, right? Like, this is a sport that takes that stuff super, super seriously.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And I was looking through some of this stuff and talking about it with a couple friends yesterday, and we kind of stumbled on the fact that in the 80s, MLB banned Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays from the sport. They were banned from baseball for being brand ambassadors for casinos. So this is like, they weren't even like placing sports bets. They were like at roulette tables as brand ambassadors making a lot of money at these New Jersey casinos, and MLB banned them from the sport. So anyway, that's a long time ago, and, you know, it's obviously very different than the ePay stuff. But what was the question?
the question was just simply, what do you want to see play out with the Jays? Like, what's the story? Because, yeah, you're a guy, you're like me, you like the storylines, and I'm curious which one it is for you that you want to see play out with them. Can be anything, even if we've already touched base.
Yeah, I'd say it just comes down to Vladdy.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy now in his 9th or 10th season now. This will be his 10th season with the organization. And, you know, after being signed in 2015 as an amateur, and I remember him at that point coming to Rogers Center as, you know, literally a child, a 16-year-old kid, and, you know, taking BP, and have followed him every step of the way since, right? Whether it was in the minors when he was a top prospect, or 2021 when he had that monster year, or everything since. So Vladdy, to me, like, that's a long standing plot for this team, and he can push them into the playoffs. He can help them succeed in the playoffs, or as we saw last year, sometimes it's those moments where he's picked off second base and he can contribute to a big loss too. So to me, it's Vladdy. If I'm putting it really,
yeah, similar. Of course, it really is. It's the chosen one, right? It's the prince that was promised. It's the prodigal son. You're right. It's crazy to think about that, like, that it's been that long since we saw that grainy footage of him taking BP and everyone going, listen, I know this is crazy, but the sound of the ball off the bat when he's 16 is pretty clearly different. And we went, yeah.
It's wild. Yeah. I have BP. I have videos on my phone that'll pop up, you know, in those like memories. For, yeah. This is for when you have your phone with you. And yeah. It's, you know, basically it'll like show me videos of Vladdy and Bo when they're like, this is like 2017, 18. Yeah. They're like so skinny. They're again, yeah. They're like 19 or I don't know, I was 18 years old.
Children.
At the time. Of course, yeah. They're like, yeah, they are children taking batting practice, and it's wild to see how far they've come. But in the case of Vladdy, he still has a lot further to go as well. And maybe we saw the beginnings of that yesterday, or maybe not. We'll see.
God, I hope so. God, I hope so. Ben Nicholson-Smith at the Letters, MLB editor for Sportsnet. Thanks for making time, brother. I'll talk to you soon. I'll text you back.
Sounds good.
I'll text you back.
Yeah, please.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah, don't ghost me this time.
No, I won't. All right, see you, brother. VNS. It was a fun one yesterday. God, I love baseball. So happy it's back. So happy it's back. Yesterday was bliss for me, honestly. It was just, this was the perfect day. Thank God the Leafs played well. I'm going to talk about that in a second, but thank God the Leafs played well because I'm sitting there, the Jays just won. I have the post-Jays winning buzz, Vladdy bomb buzz, and I'm flipping around and watching other baseball games, and I'm just like, yes, I'm betting on them. Then March Madness comes on. I'm watching high-intensity March Madness games. Leafs play well. Night happens. Cool into just, you know, the post-Leafs talk time, the evening, just for me, 10 o'clock at night. Two Madness games going on, both of them close. UNC-Bama in like a little bit of a sneaky classic, like a really fun, really fun game. And then I throw the Mariners game on. I'm watching them have all their optimism and still stink, still find a way to stink. It's weird with Luis Castillo. He's like the best, not great guy. He's like the nastiest guy who I'm like, I don't really trust you at all. Even though clearly he destroyed the Blue Jays. But outside of that, I'm like, I don't know. All I'll say is that used to be Felix Hernandez Day every single year. And it was, you know who I trust? That guy. And now he's the replacement for him. I was like, not really. Anyway, I'm watching them, the Red Sox, and I don't know any of the Red Sox players. I'm like, holy crap, this is insane to watch a Red Sox team where they're rolling out five dudes who I've never heard of before. And then they go to a bullpen full of guys I've until Kenley Jansen closes it up. But they get like nobody I've ever heard of before. And night ends, picked one of the dogs that won. Perfect. Woke up this morning and said, let's go to work. Let's get in there and go to work. Feel grateful for the work that we get to do. All right, but yeah, quick break. A couple quick things. Why last night's Leafs game really mattered, but also, man, the one player who just can't catch a break. That's next.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Armin's off today, and we've got the new guy, Mike Jose, doing the board. And I always think it's interesting when guys start to do this job and they see what music choices they do. First of all, the hubris to not even ask me, like, hey, man, what do you like? He's like, no. I will choose what I like. No consultation to you whatsoever. And then that's what he just did. Da-na-na-na-na. He's like, this is the one. this is it, baby. This is what I groove to. This is how Mike Jose gets down, son. Love it. Leafs. That was as dominant as a win as possible yesterday. They kicked the crap out of the Capitals. Like, you know, we did Leafs talk yesterday and mentioned that there was basically no threatening moments. Like, I think that there's somewhat of an interesting wall discussion because he's played three in a row and one of them was flat out his worst game as a Leaf. But the other two were really good. Oh, sorry. One was really good. And then yesterday it was just steady, fine, nothing happens, low event. But that's kind of the script for a game like that. And I actually wondered, all right, why not actually roll him into a fourth game? Why not take another look? Let him keep running. Samsonov, okay, you got a contusion on the post. Is what I think they settled it as. Is that he hurt his leg because he hit it. It was a contusion. I went, all right, man, you took yourself out and we're trying to get serious here, and the other kid is taking it more seriously, and so you're leaving. You couldn't play through that? Okay, well, then you're going to be conservative. You'd wait until he loses. Or maybe you just give him one of the, like, you let Wohl have that Sabres game Saturday night, and then you fire test Samsonov against the Panthers the way that you've fire tested Wohl against the Bruins. Although the Panthers are kind of reeling. Panthers. Daniela, you sent me that quote, Maurice. What was it called? Pick a quote night? But what was the actual line? He said, you can make your own quote and I won't bitch about it, or I won't complain about it. I went, that's amazing. That's clearly like an old school Maurice quote that he heard. That's an old school coach play that he dug out for 2024, and I appreciate it. Pick a quote was, damn, that was awesome. I loved that. I really, really like that. But yeah, so maybe you do that with the goaltenders. But there was two things that I thought were meaningful for the Leafs yesterday. One is bad, one is good. The good one is, I think that people in this market don't exactly love Sheldon Keefe, okay? I think that's fair to say. I don't think that he's loved. I actually think that he's very similar in some to John Schneider in that it's a guy doing the job for the first time in a meaningful way and some good regular season successes, but people wonder if they get too tight when the games matter or what exactly they have in terms of control. The Stars seem to love Sheldon Keefe, but there's been other guys that haven't adored him or the way that he's run the bench. And when you had a mercenary team like this year's and a guy who grips the stick as tight as Sheldon Keefe does, and I mean this in like a both positive and negative way, where it's like, this guy's intense. This guy's a leave no stone unturned kind of person. He's not afraid to, you know, speak his mind. You wonder how that works with guys like Bertuzzi, who are only here on 1 year deals, right? When you start to push him down the lineup, you wonder how that works for guys like Max Domi, who signed here for less, right? You do. I think anyways, if you're really thinking about Keefe critically, that would be one of the areas. Put all the strategy, whatever stuff aside. Like, that's one of the things is, does the guy have the entire room? Does he have some of the stars? Are they going to respond? And he called out his best players after what he called an immature win. And I know that this market, it's the one where, yeah, Maurice had a way worse quote, right? And it's barely scratching the surface. It's barely going to make any kind of round. So there is a Toronto element to this. I understand that. But he called out his team, called them immature, and they came out and played one of their tightest games in a while against a team that's fighting for a playoff spot that I don't think is very good, if I'm being brutally honest. I think the Caps kind of suck. And sure, the power play's been hot. Leafs shut that down. Just a great attention to detail game. Everything was tight. They never got in dangerous areas. They never let Ovi get cooking. They put him away. They get one little moment of momentum where they make it a 2-1 game, and immediately the Leafs respond. Their stars were stars. Their stars were their best players, and everyone else just fell in line and bought into the game plan and responded to their coach's message in a really meaningful way. And so to me, again, testing for playoffs, testing for the group is two things. Is the coach used a bullet and they responded, and that's a huge plus. But it's also, I think, when if we're going to invoke the word maturity, that's got to be said for the Leafs a little bit here, is maybe there is a little bit of added maturity in the room with some of their star players going, hey, instead of dismissing it, sloughing it off, and saying, whatever, we're not playing for anything, and guys are dinged up, and we're missing guys, and blah, 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 blah. They went out and said, nope, you know what, maybe he's right. We got to show something. We got to play a complete game. We got to play better than that. Let's do this. And that's what they did. So good for them. By the way, they now have two real workable top lines. And the Marner thing is getting more and more interesting by the day. Not because I don't think he's going to play with Matthews. I actually think he does. I think to me, it's more of a question of what they're going to do with Domi. And yeah, how often they're just going to kind of have him in a blender as someone that jumps up and plays... just some kind of like hybrid role. Because I don't see what is going to work for him when they're back at full strength, especially when Yarncroke comes back. The difficult one, and I'll keep this one short, is now Liljegren's going to miss time again, according to Sheldon Keefe. Is a quote, going to miss some time. He's got another upper body injury. And man, I've said it. He was playing confident hockey. He was playing better hockey next to Joel Edmondson. At first, you thought, based on the way that things were going and my conversation with Luke Fox yesterday, that this was a team who was going to... ultimately be fine, that they were doing load management. And now with him, you got to be a little concerned about it, especially considering they like right-handed defensemen. And the guy who fills in for him on the right side is Connor Timmins, who was like their only player last night who performed not as well, let's say. So hopefully he's all right, because again, to me, this is a very, very make or break season for Timothy Liljegren and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Anyways, quick break, and then we'll bring in our big guest of the day. Good job by Daniele. Brandon Belt, two-time World Series champion, former Blue Jay. That's next.
Breaking down the top stories in hockey and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I think one of my favorite compliments is when someone's like, why wasn't that your thing? Why didn't they give that to you? I'm like, yeah, you're right. That could have been for me. The implication is that you're really good at something. And there's other people who aren't as good at it as you. Our next guest, he's a two-time World Series champ. He's former Blue Jays first baseman, DH, and current free agent. But most importantly, he led my confidence rankings last year for long stretches of the Blue Jays season. It's Brandon Belt. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Like, the Jays won a game. I lost $1 million on March Madness yesterday. Again, betting on teams that I don't know like nearly enough about this and put my financial future at risk, which was probably not the smartest thing. But other than that, things are solid, man. So, yeah, let's just dive. Are you a March Madness guy? You got to be. You're a Texas dude.
I definitely love March Madness. Yeah. I hadn't lost my whole life savings yet, but
yeah.
Hey, you got to live life, you know, and make it interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you've made a lot more money than me. That's my guess. You know, I'm looking, I think I only know your Jays contract. No, you signed a banger, like a $70 million banger once, didn't you?
I signed a six-year deal when I was with the Giants back in, like, 2016.
There we go. Yeah, you can bet on March Madness. Actually, send me money. send me money. I need it. I need it more than you, man. Why are you playing? Like, let's just start with this. You had 858 OPS last season. Way lesser guys, older guys, way bigger lottery tickets, Scott, spring invites. Is this just a situation where, like, you want a perfect spot? Like, what's going on with you?
It's definitely not that. I wish I could tell you. I don't know. It's kind of baffled me a little bit. I honestly hadn't had hardly any calls at all that have gone more than, have gone past the point of teams saying, hey, we're interested. That's it. We're just checking in. So, we hadn't even got down to talk money with anybody or anything like that. So, I wish I had an answer for you. I just don't.
Dude, that's crazy because when I was asking around, right, like I was just kind of texting some people going like, oh, I got Belt on the show tomorrow. This is nuts because, you look at the season and it's unreal, especially when you consider, you were coming back from injury. You start the year and it was you were ice cold, right? Like, I'm sure even, you thought, oh, no, maybe this is done. Maybe I am finished. I'm not going to be able to get this back. But then the rest of the season, yeah, you put it together. Like, I do a thing. It's like confidence rankings of who I want up at the dish in a big spot for a team. And yeah, for a long stretch of the season, it's just like it was only you and Bo on the Blue Jays that anybody could basically feel good about. And the response I got back from a lot of people was just simply, oh, no, he wants to be a Ranger. And so, like, he's kind of angling for his one spot. So that's not true. You would play for just about anybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I was kind of on the fence at first about what I wanted to do this year, just because it was more of like a family thing. I didn't know if it was time to kind of hang it up. But I still felt like I had a lot to offer for somebody. And when I decided that I wanted to play, I understand the business of baseball. And you don't necessarily always get to go where you want to. So I didn't really have any team in mind that I was like, okay, I got to go here or I'm not playing. Mm-hmm. It was just, I wanted to play baseball. So, I was open to pretty much any team. I definitely wanted to go somebody that had a chance to win something. Mm-hmm. But that was about it. There was no narrowing the teams down to who I absolutely wanted to go play for. Just, I wanted to play baseball. So, we'll wait to see who comes forward and I can decide then, but it's just, nobody's come forward. And I, like I said, it's just kind of, it's been kind of confusing because, you know, last year I was coming off a season where I was injured the entire season, mm-hmm. and it was pretty easy to sign last year. I mean, it was, you know, I had quite a few teams call and quite a few teams want me to come play for them, and this year it's just been basically zero. So I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, there just hasn't been a team that's wanted me. I guess that's just part of baseball sometimes.
Kind of, except for your last three healthy seasons, OPS 1015, 975, 858 last year. It's like, it's a lot of good. It's a lot of really good recent track record.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm in my prime, I think, as far as like approach and what I want to do in the game and you know, what my goals are when I go out to play every single night. Mm-hmm. So it's you know, it sucks in that respect, but you know, it's I don't even know. I don't really have a great answer for how I feel about it either. You know, it just hasn't happened for me, and I don't know how to really feel about it.
Well, would you have taken it like? And again, it feels weird to say this given the track record and, you know, the two World Series wins and the way that you performed last year. But would you have taken like just even a spring invite?
You're talking about just
non-guarantee, with a team. Would you have done that? Would you have done non-guarantee? Because, yeah, there's some dudes like that are out there, even that ended up on major league rosters, and I don't want to even say particularly, even potentially on this baseball team, maybe in here in this city, that did that and ended up getting contracts. Would you have done something like that, or was that off the table for you? You needed to have your spot guaranteed. Again, that's your right if you wanted to do it. I am just curious.
No, yeah, definitely. I definitely wouldn't have taken that. And, you know, I don't want to sound ungrateful or anything. It's just that I feel like I have proven myself, especially over the past few years, that, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think I'm in that spot right now. So, and, you know, I saw other guys, you know, you have comps going into every, you know, sure. every off season, and you see other people get signed that are, you know, comparables to you. And there was no reason for me to accept anything like that. And you know, that's not something I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I feel like I still feel like I have a lot to offer somebody and I can help somebody win baseball games. But you know, to go in not guaranteed to me just wasn't an option on the table this year.
Yeah. But I think that's fair, especially given that, you know, you said it, you've got two kids, right? You got two kids.
Yeah, I got two boys.
Yeah, you got two boys. Like, you know, you're later in your career. You still obviously want to play, but I know that, yeah, you said it. You know, you were on the fence, didn't know if you were going to continue your career. Showing up for a non-guaranteed contract and the grind that comes with spring, I think that, you know, especially, you know, being away from your family, doing all that stuff, makes sense. You just said it. You earned a 6-year contract with the Giants. You made good money with the Blue Jays last year. I'm guessing it's not something like you need. It's the only point of identity you have. So I understand that, but... Yeah, it is. It is very odd that the way this offseason has gone, free agency wise, for a lot of guys. But I would still even say, you know, you're one of the stranger ones. Like, given again the track record and the ability, it does seem weird. Like, what are people in your corner saying? Like, what does your agent say? Like, when you said these teams, they basically have the non-starter conversation with you. What's the hang-up point?
Well, I mean, we just hadn't really gotten that far with anybody. There's hadn't been brought up. I mean, there's just been a lot of, you know, it's been a lot of confusion on my part, my agent's part, you know, and we've tried to do a lot of different things to get people to start moving forward with talks, but nothing has really come to fruition. And, you don't know exactly how to take it. What it seemed like was, you know, teams would call and I'd they kind of explained that I was their backup choice is what it amounted to. You know, they were typically going after some long-term guy, mm-hmm. and if they didn't get them, then they were going to call back. So it just so happened that pretty much every one of them got their guy they were going for, and then nobody called back. So, I don't know how to take that. I didn't take it as a negative, really. It's just that, you know, I can understand why teams would want to go more with somebody who they're going to have a little bit more longer term. Mm-hmm. They could plan for the future a little bit, but so that was fine with me, whatever, you know, but I figured somebody would at least call back and then we would have, you know, some options. But just didn't happen.
Well, normally when there's familiarity and success, like, that's how it works out. So what was it like with the Jays then? Was there, I guess there was obviously no real serious intent, but did you guys have at least conversations about it? Like, what did it look like?
Yeah, my agent talked to Ross a few times, and, you know, it never got to the point where I was like, okay, yeah, they're definitely going to do something, make an offer or anything like that. But, you know, when I left last off season, he said that he'd be in touch, and he was. You know, he got in touch with us, and it seems like he had a few other people in mind as well. So I guess, you know, he just went after those other people a little bit more than he came after me, and that's just the business of baseball. You know, it's not any hard feelings or anything like that. It's just it is what it is.
Yeah, I don't think it's hard feelings. So, like, I don't want to over-personalize this, but, like, as someone who's just looking at this objectively on the outside, right, you're younger and you had a better season, essentially, than two guys they replaced you with roster-wise. And so you go, okay, how does this make sense? Like, especially the main guy. And then you come down to a couple things where you go, okay, so it's a team that didn't have a lot of turnover, right? They didn't change too many things. They came back. It's, like, same front office, same management staff, a lot of the same players, and you go, okay, well, how much of this is just, you know, a guy being a victim of wanting to be there, a victim of, well, we got to change something, right? Like, we got to make one thing a little bit different. And one of the reasons for that I always think about is it ended so poorly. Like, it was such a painful exit. And, like, Whit Merrifield specifically was, like, very public and open about how pissed he was with the way things ended. Like, were you one of those guys? Did you feel like there was maybe irreconcilable differences in terms of the way that they handled the Berríos pull and the final game of the season? Like, did you get over it the same way, being, you know, an older player who wants to win and who does have more ability to kind of speak his mind on stuff like that?
Yeah, there wasn't irreconcilable differences with me. I think that, you know, the managers and, you know, teams make decisions and you got to live with those decisions. I think the bigger problem was we didn't put the ball in play enough to score runs. Mm-hmm. And so I took that personally as far as that goes. It wasn't, you know, I don't necessarily, for me, I was kind of looking internally and thinking, you know, what could I have done better? And I could have done a lot better. And there's stuff that the whole team could have done a lot better. But I looked at it as unfinished business, you know, and I was thinking about, well, if they end up calling, this is definitely a place where I'd want to be and try to take care of what we didn't take care of last season. So, but, you know, that's just everybody kind of has their different opinions on that. It's just how I felt.
What comes to mind, though, when you say things could have been better? Like, what could have been done better?
Well, I just think as an offense, we could have done better last year. You know, when we're in Minnesota, we just, you know, didn't do well enough to win the game. I mean, you could have pretty much thrown anybody out there, and if they'd have done the same thing, you know, we'd have still lost. I mean, we couldn't get any runs across the plate. So you got to do better than that, you know, in playoff games, obviously, if you want to keep on moving on. I don't know really what the issue was. I'm not even sure there was an issue. They just pitched well. You know, they came out and they pitched really well, and so did we. We just didn't, you know, as a team, we just didn't do well enough to win, and that happens sometimes. But it still left me with a feeling of, you know, unfinished business. Like, you know, it definitely stung a lot because I knew what that team was capable of, and I'd seen what we'd done throughout the season, and you just had this feeling of, like, that should have ended way better for us than it did. So that was definitely a tough loss, and it made it even tougher that I really did love the team. I love the guys, man. I love playing with them. It was some of the most fun I've ever had playing baseball last year. So for it to end that way, it definitely stung a little bit.
It's crazy to hear you say that it was some of the most fun you had playing baseball, though, just because the season, it was such a grind of a year. Like, you guys won a lot of games, but you were one of the worst offenses with hitting in with runners in scoring position. There was, like, a really tough finish to the season. Like, that Ranger series was just, like, man, I went to all those games, and it felt horrible in the Rogers Center, like, in a way that it hadn't in a while. And even at the end of the year, Shapiro came out and was like, yeah, this one was one of the weirdest seasons I've been a part of in terms of it felt like a grind at times. So you guys didn't feel that in the clubhouse? Like, it must have carried around with you guys, the runners in scoring position stuff, because everybody had to have theories on it at least. Or did you just not want to talk about it because it's like you address it, then it becomes more real?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you harp on it too much, it becomes something that you – it's a psychological issue you have out there while you're on the field. But, you know, it was something that we needed to, I guess, address a little bit. I don't know if we addressed it specifically, but it's something that we need to get better at for sure. And, you know, I've been on a lot of teams like that. Uh-huh. And you don't really – you know, it's, you know, I've been on good teams like that too. So you don't necessarily have to be amazing at that, but you got to at least have timely hits if you're not going to have a lot of them. And we just couldn't find a rhythm to where we had those, you know, those times for the season where we get those really timely hits and would put us over the top in the end of the game. And, you know, it's not pointing the finger at anybody else. I could have done a lot better with that as well. It just didn't happen for us. So I think that, you know, when you're a veteran of the team, you kind of take that a little bit personally and, you try to, for one, just go out there and lead by example. I think that's the biggest thing you can do. And, I don't think anybody put too much pressure on themselves though. I didn't feel that from the team, and, maybe I didn't have my finger on the pulse of the team like I thought I did, but I just, you know, that's just not something that, I really felt like was a huge, you know, concern or a hindrance from us getting better. So, it just happened that way. And, you know, obviously I wish it would have been better, but it just wasn't, and it didn't end well for us. And, but you know, it's just because you do it one year doesn't mean you're going to do it the next year. So, I was pretty optimistic that if I was to come back, that's something that we could be a lot better at, especially with the hitters that we have on the team. I mean, you really have one guy that changes it around for the next season. That can change the entire team and your entire momentum throughout the season.
Well, that was it, right? But that's the gamble that they've made this year is if you look at across the board, it was the talk of this the offseason is positive regression because the roster was like everybody had a down year. Even Bo Bichette, who had a good season and who was just like remarkably consistent, was still like down a couple of points OPS from where he normally is. Like Vladdy had a down year. Springer had a down year. Like actually, you were, you know, one of the only guys that basically delivered on what we thought it was going to end up being offensively or what some of the upside was going to be. So yeah, it was just a little strange, I think, for some when we were looking at it and saying, okay, well, why was it him that kind of fell on the sword in terms of not being on the roster? And again, if I'm looking at some of it, it's like, yeah, the team with runners in scoring position, it was historically strange, right? Like you guys were such a good offense, like by just about every metric until it was the runners in scoring position thing. And that's why I did want to ask you about the mental component, but it doesn't sound like you guys were carrying that around too much. But could you feel the fan frustration at the end of the season? Because I always wonder about like player fan synergy and how that can actually impact a clubhouse or whether it impacts a clubhouse. And yeah, what it feels like as a player when you start to hear like those groans and you're struggling at the dish as a team to cash in those spots.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if a lot of people would say this or not, but you can feel the energy. You can feel the excitement when you come in to play a big series or when you do something good. Well, on the flip side of that, you can definitely feel when, you know, the negative side of that when it comes to, you know, not playing well. So I think we definitely could feel that, you know, from the fans. But it's one of those things that, we're professionals out there and we got a job to do. And it's not something that, you know, keeps us from doing our job. It's just something that the fans want to see and rightfully so. And we weren't performing in that respect. So, you know, it's one of those things that we knew what we had to do. We just didn't go out and do it. I mean, there's not always an explanation for something. It's just, it didn't happen, you know, and it wasn't a, you know, coach thing at all, because our hitting coaches, all the coaches on the team put in the work to get the job done. The players put in the work to get the job done. I mean, there was no laziness out there. It was everybody was working to do their job. It just didn't end up happening. So, you know, it's really tough to put a finger on why it didn't happen last year. It just didn't. And, you know, I think if you ask those guys too, they would say that they had a down year, especially for, you know, how good they are. But it is funny to say that. It is funny to say, like, Vladdy had a down year. He still, had an 800-something OPS or right around there. So his down year is still a pretty dang good year. But, you know, he's an absolute superstar, as well as Bo and Springer and all them. And they would tell you themselves that they probably didn't have the year they wanted to have. And but I'll tell you this. It's not on any one of those guys at all. I mean, the entire – in fact, it's probably more important that the other guys step up and do their job. You know, people like myself, you know, to step up and we have to step up and do our job to take the pressure off of them, because, you know, they're the ones that got a target on their back every single game they go out there. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pick up some of that slack, it just builds and builds and builds on them. So, you know, while they didn't probably have the season they wanted to, it is absolutely 100% not their fault that we didn't move on in the playoffs last year.
So, you know, I'm curious too with this is that we now do this thing where it's like, well, you got to have vets who lead in certain ways. And like the things I got back on you is you are very much, and you even said it in this interview, like you are a lead by example guy. Like you are a go out and do the work and show how the work is supposed to be done. But when you're on a team like this, were there moments where you thought, oh, okay, this is the way things are going with the offense, and I have been on a lot of winning teams, and I've had a lot of success in this league, and part of it is I'm not just here to, I'm not just here to hit. I'm here to maybe offer some expertise or some leadership. Is that something that comes naturally to you? Is that something that you like to do? Like, how is it for a veteran player when guys are struggling at the dish, you know, talking to other guys about it? Do you do that? Or is that something, you know, you save a bullet once or twice a season? How does that work?
No, yeah, that's something I definitely, I would say that I didn't love it obviously earlier on in my career, but
yeah.
Being the veteran guy and just having experience, I love being able to share that experience with some of the younger guys. And, you know, we did it in a team setting a few times throughout the season, but also just one-on-one, you know. I think when you talk stuff out with other people, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be, you know, about a specific issue that they're having that is, you know, going wrong for them at the moment. But mm-hmm. they could just be just talking about hitting in general, you know, that sparks something in their head that they kind of figure it out themselves from that point on. Now, there would be times when they're like, hey, man, I've been through the same thing. This is what I tried to do to get out of that. I think this is really helpful. It's something that you might be able to do to help you kind of get out of this little valley you're in. But a lot of times it's just talking about hitting and, you know, as a team almost, or, you know, sometimes one-on-one, that kind of sparks something in their mind that are like, okay, hey, you know, last time I went through this, this is what I did to get out of it. I'll try this again and see if I can do that. And it worked at times. It worked at times, and sometimes it didn't. But, you know, that's kind of how, you know, I was taught whenever I was coming up in the game. And you get out there and you talk about it a little bit, and stuff seems to pop up in your head that kind of, you know, and you figure stuff out.
Mm-hmm. So was there anybody on the team that you really felt like you connected with in terms of being able to talk about that, like that you love talking hitting with?
You know, this is a really, like, on the fence cliche type of answer, but I mean, I really love talking to everybody about it. Honestly, I mean, I don't know if I've been on too many teams where I really just enjoyed being around and talking to everybody about, you know, whatever it is, baseball or non-baseball. So, you know, early in the year we would, you know, me and Jano kind of talked quite a bit, and he ended up being one of my really good friends on the team. And, you know, I think, really, honestly, the one thing that impressed me about this team was how willing the younger guys, especially the superstar guys, were, how willing they were to learn from the older guys. I mean, it was not – there was not anybody in there that was just closed off, you know, closed-minded to other opinions. They wanted to learn and they wanted to get better. And, you know, Vladdy comes to mind when I say that. I mean, the kid wants to learn, he wants to get better, and he wants to be the best. And, you know, he would be very open-minded to listening what coaches and veteran guys had to say, because he wanted to take that next step. And coming from somebody like that who has been, you know, very close to winning MVP was really impressive. You don't see a lot of young guys like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, it didn't happen for us last year, but I think the future for the Toronto Blue Jays is pretty bright with the guys that they have, and him and Bo and whoever else is out there. I mean, it's just a lot of good young players on that team.
You know, as you're saying it, I wonder how much of that has to do with, you got three of the younger guys on the team that had major league ball player dads who grew up around it and so have the reverence to older guys.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. You know, that could have been something. And, you know, that could have been something that he's talked about with his dad or whatever it may be. But, you know, it was crazy to kind of see that, man. You don't see a lot of these superstar guys, especially young guys, that'll just come up and just soak in what coaches and veterans and other players have to say, you know, at times that can be a problem. I'm not saying it was for him, but it can be for specific people, but just because you take too much stuff in and you don't know how to, you know, categorize or separate it or use it, then it can be a problem because you got too many different points of view coming at you from different angles. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's necessarily a problem that he has. And he, you know, those guys are really, really smart baseball people. Mm-hmm. So they already know what they're doing out there. And for them to be able to take in some other advice from other people is just a crazy notion, I guess, of, you know, kind of the teams I've been on and the players I've played with. But it was super impressive, man. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really love playing on the team.
Mm. So one thing is that basically every guy that you ever speak to that's played on the Jays since he's come on the team always talks really highly of Danny Jansen, which is why, you know, I hope he ends up getting re-signed because he's up this year for a new contract extension. But the other thing, too, that you mentioned there that you just slow true is, like, whenever I try to give people advice in this industry or try to, you know, share some wisdom, that's the one thing I always regret is I go, damn, I said too many things. I gave them too much to deal with at once, and I would have rather it just be kind of the one thing. So that ability, like you said, for Vladdy, for others to take in, like, a lot and not have it hamper them, I think that's, like, a real strength that you can have as a person because, boy, you can get absolutely overwhelmed and a lot of people like myself can end up, yeah, overwhelming or oversaturating you with information. Last thing on the Jays. The ballpark thing was weird. They were like, we're going lefties, lefties, lefties. This is the power alley. And then you look at guys like Varsho, and they had no power at home. Vladdy didn't hit his first home run at home until, I think, June. It was nuts. Like, guys just weren't hitting for power at the Rogers Center. And, you know, your numbers, your splits were closer, but you were still better on the road. Was there something with the park? Like, was it cursed? Like, was it just like the dimensions of the ballpark were supposed to play perfectly to guys? It was supposed to be more offense and it ended up not being that way. Like, do you have a theory on it? Did you guys ever talk about it? Like, what was it to you?
Yeah, I don't really know. It did seem like something was going on, but, you know, I've also played in San Francisco for 12 years, so I kind of already had that in my mind. I'm like, as soon as we're not hitting for power at the ballpark, I'm like, oh, man, you know, home. Wind's blowing in. Yeah. You can't say that as much at the Rogers Center.
Exactly.
But I don't think there was anything specific. I mean, it was set up great for hitters at the ballpark. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, I don't know if the ball traveled as well, or at least this is what I got from other guys, was the ball was definitely not traveling as well last year as it was in previous years. Now, I don't know if that was an environment thing and within the stadium, or if it was the balls changed or whatever it may be, it just didn't happen for us as far as, you know, hitting for power. I don't think it was a mental thing. I think everybody usually hits better at home, mm-hmm. Whether it be for power numbers or whatever it is, just overall, you hit better at home. You're used to it. You're more familiar. It was a weird deal, you know, and it's not something I can really explain. It was just one of those things that it just, the ball didn't seem like it would carry as well as you thought it would, especially for how hard you hit the ball. So, you know, I don't know if that's it. It's just the first thing the hitters look at whenever stuff's not going great. You're like, oh yeah, you know, the ball's not traveling well. Something's happening.
Yeah.
You know, usually what I used to say is just the wind was blowing in. You know, I'd make up some excuse for myself, but at some point you got to look at yourself in the mirror and then you got to be like, hey, I'm, you know, it's got to be something I'm doing. That's the only way you can get better.
Yeah. So the dome's closed. You're like, God, stupid wind.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like, I know, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I guess yeah, this is a change of baseballs. No, but it was weird. Like, again, honestly, last year for the Blue Jays, there's just stuff that just ends up going down as weird mysteries. But I had to ask you about it. Anyways, last one for me is you are a guy who, and yeah, thanks for being generous with the time today. I had JP Ricciardi on yesterday, and he brought something up to me that I hadn't been thinking about, and I wanted your perspective on as a guy who's been around the game for a while and who has also dealt with some significant injuries in your career. And he was talking about how, you know, we're not seeing a dip in injuries in baseball. All these sports science departments, all the training that everybody does, we're still seeing a lot of injuries in baseball. And his theory is that there's a lot of overtraining going on and that guys are actually doing too much, especially in the off seasons, not enough time for rest. I'm curious, like, again, as somebody who has now seen this continue to evolve, What are your thoughts on that? Like, do you think there's some validity to his argument from a player standpoint? Like, are there too many cooks in the kitchen? Is there too much being asked of a baseball player year round in 2024?
You know, before you said what his answer was, that was going to be my exact answer. I think there is a lot of players are training now more than they ever have. And players are also more athletic and stronger than they've ever been. But I think that what comes along with that is you're going to have, you know, more injuries, or it seems like you're going to have more injuries. There's definitely been a lot over the past few seasons. You know, I think some years are a little bit, outliers, you know, like COVID and stuff like that. And I can't remember the other year, 21 or 22, when we kind of started spring training late. I think that kind of plays into it a little bit. But, you know, there is a lot of training out there. You're, you know, getting a lot stronger, and muscles might be getting a little bit tighter and stuff like that. I mean, I think that's a possibility. For me personally, I had to back off a little bit because one of my goals throughout my career was to get stronger each offseason, to work harder, to get better. But I kind of felt like it wasn't helping in the sense that I wanted it to. So I started backing off a little bit and just taking care of my body a little bit more, not pushing it too hard. And last year was a good example of that. And I felt great throughout the entire season. Mm. Obviously this is anecdotal, but you know, I felt great. You know, I had those two injuries. One was, you know, a hamstring injury, which I never have ever. It was just kind of a fluke. And the other one was a back injury just from laying in bed for 3 or 4 days when I got sick. But other than that, I felt amazing. And I think it's maybe something that other players might want to, you know, look into, you know, at least just see if that could help. That could help some, is maybe just backing off just a touch, because there's a certain point you reach in your training where it's just hard to get any better. You know, like you reach a certain point, you know, that's really all you need. And if you push yourself further past that, then you might be setting yourself up for some injuries. And I know there's going to be a lot of, you know, health science, you know, weightlifting coaches that are going to think that's ridiculous. But I think it's definitely a possibility that they need to look into, that they're just overworking themselves in the off season, especially when the baseball season is so grueling in itself. You just got to be more aware of your body and how much you can take.
I think they absolutely need to look at it, especially when you're talking about like guys who've been around the game for a long time, like you, that are saying stuff like this. You're right. It is anecdotal in the sense of like, just because something works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody. But no, man, rest is important. Like, you know, my cousin said something to me once that I thought was really kind of sharp, and I'm going to kind of butcher it. But it's like, when you're on a road trip and you stop to gas up the vehicle, you're not looking at that like you're screwing up the road trip. You got to do it. Like, you just keep driving. There's not going to be any gas in the car. And I do feel like that with some of these modern day athletes, right? Is that it's just like train, 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 train. And you're like, man, you do need to rest and recuperate. Like, you do need to chill out a little bit. But I think one of the issues, there's two issues as I see it, you know, just thinking about it in the last 24 hours. One is that, man, it's so competitive. And now you've got like guys with social media accounts. So it's like they want to show what they're doing all the time. There's not like privacy with what you're doing. Like, it's almost, hey, well, why isn't he posting his workouts? Is he working out? Like, is he doing as much as he possibly can? That this like comparison to what other people are doing, or the ability to see other people working, maybe makes you feel like, oh crap, I'm not doing enough, right? Like, holy crap, I'm not doing enough. I feel that in my career. So I would imagine that happens in a highly professional / competitive environment like Major League Baseball. And then two is that you're getting so many people that are getting paid big money to be telling you to do stuff that they always have to be telling you to do stuff. Otherwise, what are they there for?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, working out, lifting and taking care of your body, that's something that players can control.
Uh-huh.
And they, if they don't do well in their sport, they don't want to be because they didn't do something that they could control, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, of course.
Like, there's a lot of things you can't control in baseball, but I can control how hard I work out.
Yep.
So I want to make sure I do that to the best of my ability to get my chance to go be successful throughout my career. And if you don't do it, there's definitely a feeling of, man, I didn't do enough. I ruined this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to feel that. So, and like you said, it's super competitive, obviously. I mean, it's a professional sport. So, and you got somebody, you know, breathing down your back the whole time wanting to take your spot. So you don't want those guys to outwork you, you know, and end up being the reason that you lose your spot on the team. So, you know, I had the ability, because I've been in the league so long, mm-hmm. Just to, you know, I have experience now, so I understand my body a little bit, and I know what my body needs, and it needs a lot more rest than it needs to actually in recovery than it needs to go out there and actually work, just because it gets so much work during the season. So, you know, I took advantage of that, and I think that's something I tried to relay to the guys. You know, I don't know if it really clicks with a lot of them right now, just because, you know, the reason you got up there is because you work. You know, just like Rihanna said. And you got to go out there and you got to take advantage of it. And, you know, that's how they got to the place that they're at. And they're not going to back off of it just because they're there. They're going to continue to do the same thing because they want to hang around for a long time. So it's completely understandable. I'm just not sure that that's the direction that you have to go in order to play well. In fact, it could be the wrong thing in terms of keeping you on the field.
Hey, man, we're the same age, and I feel that need for more rest, too, all the time. I'm like, man, you know what I need? Rest. I need so much more rest constantly. That's the new way to feel good. Hey, dude, I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm really thankful that you spent as much time as you did with me. I hope that you're playing baseball this season, dude. I hope it works out. And just that it's not, you know, mashing bombs against the Blue Jays. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate you, and I'm gonna stay ready. So we'll see what happens.
I hope so, man. Brandon Belt, former Toronto Blue Jays first baseman, DH, and of course, 2-time World Series champ. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's hit what we missed.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Daniele Franceschi, super producer, the guy that booked Brandon Belt, filling in for Armin today. What did we miss?
What did we miss, JD? Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, yeah, there's different things. First and foremost, Toronto Maple Leafs, JD, as you were talking to one Brandon Belt, announcing a contract extension for Simone Benoit. 3 years for Simone Benoit at $1.135 million per season.
Great deal. Love that Tree Living is, first of all, love that Tree Living found this guy.
Yeah.
But two, love that he wants to be here despite kind of losing his spot as a regular down the stretch, that he grabbed this deal. You're not getting a better defenseman for $1.1 million than Simone Benoit, especially, again, as the cap is going up, and so that's even a little bit less than what we've been accustomed to, probably closer to the minimum. A guy that teammates like, a guy that has an edge to his game, a guy that is a gym rat freak who people, like, he dominates in the gym. Dominant guy there from a physical standpoint. And who can play? And recently, I think that his play has dipped a little bit. That's going to happen with a guy who makes $1.1 million over the course of an entire season. But overall, that's incredible value. Like, let me put it this way. The Leafs, I don't want to do like the under Dubas thing, but they try to have, you know, Connor Timmins be their seventh defenseman. Would you rather have Connor Timmins be your seventh defenseman or Simone Benoit be your seventh defenseman? And next year, he'll probably get an opportunity to be like an actual regular. That's the thing with this. But Great bet. I don't want to say that I'm shocked that he took this, because I don't think that he's some kind of incredible player by any stretch of the imagination, but we've seen guys have years, I would say, kind of comparable to his, like Justin Hull, who ended up getting more money with a lower cap. So I'm glad that he wanted to be a Maple Leaf. I'm glad that they got this business done out of the way. And I'm glad that it shores up a spot on a blue line next year that is going to enter the offseason with a lot of holes. So you got out ahead of it. You got it done. You got a player that no one's going to bat an eye about making that kind of a contract, and who I don't think that you can replace at a better value. Good deal all around. Kind of simplistic take, because who could ever have a different opinion on this one? But still, that's how I feel about it. All right, what's next?
All right, you want to do March Madness here?
Yeah, hell yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's do March. Actually, one thing, if you don't mind, I want to say one thing about Simone Benoit.
Sure.
So 1.35 will be the new deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same as Ryan Reeves. Reeves, you feel a lot better about paying 1.35 to Simone Benoit.
You sure do.
You 100% do.
Yeah.
And I do like the way he's played. It's been a great story.
Yeah, he is a great story.
The March Madness. If you would afford me the opportunity, man, like Arizona last night. Arizona falling to Clemson in the Sweet 16. Third year at the helm for Tommy Lloyd, who's never advanced beyond the Sweet 16 with Arizona. The Wildcats, in his 3 years, they've been a one seed once, and they've been a two seed twice. That was one of the worst, most embarrassing, pathetic coaching performances I think I've ever seen in a college game. I think, quite frankly, that was the worst loss of the entire tournament for any team. Mm. And that includes Kentucky. Like, Kentucky lost to Oakland.
Yeah.
And everybody wants John Calipari to be ousted from his seat at the University of Kentucky as the head coach of that program.
Uh-huh.
Tommy Lloyd, do not trust that man ever again in a big game.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing.
Why?
I said it even before. It this morning to
save
you.
Save the audience.
They gave up. They lost the game by 5 points.
Uh-huh.
They gave up 6 freebie points. 3 bunny layups off baseline out of bounds plays. That is completely unacceptable when we're talking about guys that are high level elite athletes. So it's one of two things. Either you're too dumb to adjust in those situations. Cause here's the easy adjustment, JD. After they score twice, play 2-3 zone on the inbound. That's all you got to do. Figure it out. Stop giving away the back cut for a layup. Simple. They did. That happened 3 times, and they lost the game by 5. So there's your one. There's your difference.
So first of all, I love that you're here for this time because you care like me. It was a disaster for them down the stretch.
Yeah.
And I will say this, like, all the credit in the world to Clemson for getting this deep in the tournament. It's hilarious that it's happened because they jumped out to a huge lead against the Lobos, and the Lobos just couldn't figure it out. So it was like they were underdogs in that game. The underdogs in the next game, they almost blow the entire thing. They're up like 11 points with 2 minutes left. And they almost cough up the lead. Their big guy gets into foul trouble. They're just struggling to generate kind of any offense. They when the game got tight, they started to look like very much like a college team who was properly seeded. And then this game, same thing, where Arizona, they fall down big, and it's a chip away game where they can't quite get over the hump, and Clemson's doing just enough. But in terms of who was the superior team, it was pretty clear that it was supposed to be the Arizona Wildcats. The only thing, I agree with you about the coaching mistakes that they made down the stretch. But to me, the bigger issue for Arizona is like, that's where you go, oh man, it's kids.
Mm-hmm.
From the three-point shooting aspect.
Mm-hmm.
All of their players couldn't knock down a three to save their lives in that game. It was one of their worst shooting performances of the season. And that's where you love the tournament. That's where you love, the amateur still, despite these guys all making money and it being horrible that way. But that's where you still feel that is when all of a sudden some guys are looking cold and then they start to hesitate on three-point shots and it becomes, a double pump fake and a drive into the lane when it should have just been like an obvious catch and shoot. It was sort of one of those games to me. I really like that Clemson team in terms of the personality makeup. I feel like they're going to get maybe not against Alabama.
We don't know.
No,
we'll
against
see.
Alabama,
we'll
I think that they might end up being a Final Four team. I'm not doubting them anymore. I actually had the opposite thought, though, in terms of the UNC Alabama game. Because,
mm-hmm.
By the way, dogs went 3-1 yesterday straight up, which I thought was pretty interesting for a very, very chalky tournament so far. I'm going to post some picks later on the socials. Feel a little bit better about the faves tonight, I got to say. But I'm watching the UNC-Bama game. And part of me was happy watching North Carolina have, like, you know, Baycott, who's been around for a while, and like there's some familiarity with their team. But then they had, what's the kid's name that came from Notre Dame?
Oh, Cormac Ryan.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
All of a sudden he's knocking down major shots for him, and it's like he's a fifth-year senior who's coming from Notre Dame transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
The kid that's scoring a ton of big buckets for Alabama has played on 3 different teams.
He's been all over the place.
Yeah, it's like he played for the Ducks and he played for some mid-major team and had 2 seasons there. And he's like, and I will tell you, that part of the tournament is starting to bug me a little bit, is that it feels like professional basketball where guys are free agents and guys are signing with a team, and there isn't that like, okay, you were with the program for 4 years and like this is the most important thing for you. Like, I understand it, but I hate it. I hate it. I don't know why we're not allowed to say we hate it.
We can. I agree with
you. We all felt like the real unfairness with college basketball and college football when it came to how much money these athletes were making, how much coaches these were getting paid, athletic directors were getting paid, and the revenue that these kids were bringing in. And that it was just like nothing. Well, not nothing. It was a scholarship, so it should be said. It was something. But now we've entered this world, and you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, and yet it's like they didn't get it right. They had all this time to sort of figure out a better system than the one they have, and I don't know, man. Now that, like, the conferences are all jumbled again, and we've changed these playoffs, and we've got these transfers, and I love the tournament. It's been a great tournament. I don't want to complain too much about it, but this element of it feels like we're, like, college sports as we know them are very much on the verge of being dead and gone. And I'm not sure what it's going to look like 5 years from now when it's already feeling this way. So I know that there's probably someone listening to this going like, you're nuts. I'm so happy these kids got paid. I'm so glad that they got this, that they've got equity. And I just, there, to me, there had to be a better way of doing this than what the current system is. And I hate that I was taken out of the moment of the game with that thought, watching it and going, cool win, Alabama. Like, you feel like you're a football program and you feel like there was something dirty about this, the way that you two teams had these two players, basically what felt like as complete ringers. Anyway, end of rant.
It's a good rant, JD. Yeah. It's a good rant. And you're definitely onto something there. What's funny is, and I looked at this morning, actually, what does the recruiting landscape look like going into next season? Because that was always the big thing, right? For years, it's like, look at the recruiting classes. Who's got the best one incoming group of freshmen?
But now it's like, who's doing the best recruiting class exactly. From the transfer portal?
So I look at it, and it's the same blue bloods you would anticipate. And you want to know something? UConn yesterday, this is the one thing I learned. I actually think we probably have to accept the fact that they might be undeniable.
No, they're winning.
They're just that good.
Yeah, they're winning.
What's crazy is we now think that's the preeminent program right now, and rightfully so. Like, Dan Hurley's done a great job, and they're not just beating teams, crushing teams. Look at their recruiting profile next year. They have two guys, JD. Mm-hmm. Two guys that they've recruited. Neither a five-star recruit coming out of high school. Four stars. So what does that tell you? When the season's done and all their guys go away to the NBA, they're going to go replenish by just going to the portal. And that's where the game has drastically changed. And I do think, to your point, I feel like we can separate NIL and the portal. I think there's a way for that to happen. But I think the portal, the advent of the portal being so wide open, is what has really cost has changed the landscape of college sports forever. It's out of the bag now. You can't change it. You can't go back.
Totally agree. But it does kind of suck. Yeah, my other takeaway is just rapid fire is like, yeah, I think that's the case. I do like that Illinois team, but also I just don't see it. Like, there was some, yeah, there's not enough there that I think that they can win the tournament. Okay, I'm doing this rapid fire thing as we close the show because we got a minute left here. These are just opening day rapid fire takes that I had or thoughts that I had from around Major League Baseball. One, the Angels are so incredibly embarrassing. I actually think that they should have been the team that moved from California. Like, it's so bad. They get the brakes beat off of them. It's like they had one hit through the first, I think, four innings, and it was a Mike Trout home run. He's just out there doing it by himself. They got embarrassed. They have nothing. They're hopeless, rudderless, all of these things again. I don't care if it's one game. Arizona scored 16 runs. Actually, I don't know if they finished with 16, but when I wrote this down, went to bed, they had 16 runs. RBI from Moreno and Gurriel, they had... seven RBI to start their season. And
Curiel had five.
Yeah, I know. I was like, just the Jays had this awesome day. And I was like, could you guys just have one day where you suck, where the two of you like had offers instead of Gurriel having a bomb and Moreno having a big clutch double. Tyler O'Neill has five straight opening days with a home run, which is outrageous. The MLB record took another one dead center deep. I think actually one of the coolest records that you're reminded of now. Every single day is like, oh, did Tyler O'Neill hit a bomb? And yes, absolutely he did. Guy that a lot of people thought that the Blue Jays were going to flirt with. So too bad that he didn't do it with Toronto. Anyways, and then the season is already dead and over for Colorado. They're dead. They're done. You can write them off. Anyways, we'll see you next week. Have a great Easter weekend.